Blog Talk Radio.
I don't mind if you got something nice to say about me. I enjoy an accolade like the rest. And you could take my picture and hang it in.
Good morning and welcome to Solutions Live Personal Edition. I'm your host, Chickie Fitzgerald, coming to you from Tampa, Florida. Solutions provides practical advice from authors and experts on a wide range of topics for professionals to help you leave your legacy. We're launching a new lineup starting at 10 o'clock with health and wellness, 10:30 personal finance, 11 o'clock faith in the marketplace, and wrapping up the show at the 11:30 slot will be social networking. Well, good morning. It is Thursday, March 5th, and Chris Bradshaw and I are coming to you from Dallas, Texas, and Tampa, respectively. Chris, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning. Wonderful, and it's beautiful here.
Well, good. Yeah, we've got a fabulous day, too, although we've had that crisp winter Florida weather, which I actually enjoy because I can pull out my sweaters for the few weeks that we're allowed to do that. Well, our sponsor for the first part of our show today is the Barbados Tourism Authority, and I'm going to be coming back to you and talking about that. But I'll tell you what, right now, going to Barbados sounds pretty good to me. How about you?
Oh, I have been, and it is beautiful, and I can't wait to have the chance to go again someday.
Well, we may have to do that as a girlfriend getaway. It is an amazing place to go just for relaxation and kicking back. And I suspect our husbands would like a little bit more activity than you and I might like if we were together. Well, we have a great show today, and we are actually launching a new partnership this morning on our first segment, which we are going to be launching real-life renovations. And our partners in that show are Phil and Amy Parham, who those who listen to our show, the launch week of Solutions Live, will have heard Phil and Amy's story, and I'll get back to that. At 10:30, we are going to be hearing from Dan Clements, and this is going to be a really interesting segment, Chris, because that slot is about talking about financial health. And what Dan's going to be talking about is how to take a sabbatical. Even in this current economic market, and he wrote a book called Escape 101. And so I'm really, really excited to hear what he has to say because we've got a lot of friends who are contemplating formalizing the sabbaticals that perhaps they didn't choose, and so that should be really great. And then at 11 o'clock, we've got Kevin McCarthy, who wrote a book called The On Purpose Person. And I have really enjoyed getting to know Kevin, so I'm anxious to have him on and hear his perspectives on how to just really focus our lives and do things intentionally as opposed to just letting life carry us on. And at 11:30, we may have a special guest, I am still waiting to see if we will have her. And if not, you and I will enjoy our normal weekend book club, which is always one of my favorite parts of the show.
Well, I look forward to that, but I also am very excited about the speaker or guest that you might have joining us. So we'll see how that works. And again, we'll have a wonderful time either way. But right now, I guess I'm excited about meeting and hearing from Phil and Amy. I have a girlfriend who is an obsessed viewer of Biggest Loser, so I'm very familiar with the show, and they were a great couple.
Well, I just love the whole notion, and Phil and Amy have actually named their coaching practice Real Life Renovations, and, it is just always so cool how everything fits together. And, when I first launched Solutions Live, I talked about it being real-life solutions for real life. And so when I saw the name of their coaching program, I asked them if they minded if we would borrow that for the show. And so I am just really excited to hear about that. But, you know, for those who aren't aficionados of NBC's Biggest Loser, Phil and Amy were on last season and collectively lost over 250 pounds. And I am going to have to give them a little reminder call because I don't see them on our switchboard. So if you can just bear with me for a second, I will see if I can't get them on the phone. So, Chris, maybe you can
I was just going to say I can talk a little bit about
that
Real Life Renovation and Amy and Phil while you go off and do that. One of the things that they've done is created their own 90-day fitness challenge. I noticed today that it's day 54 of that. So one of the questions I'll have is, if you have to wait for the next 90 days, or can you jump on in? And we want to hear a little bit about how people are doing, how many people have, you know, how big is their circle of influence with that, and how much success do they have? Another good question, of course, is, you know, what Real Life Renovation, I believe, and I'm sure we'll hear a little bit more about this as well, that Phil was in real estate and probably still is in real estate, and maybe that's why the concept of renovation. Amy had some really interesting things to say about being in prison when she was inside her large body because of so many things that she was unable to do, and that losing the weight was like getting keys to that prison.
Yeah, I loved that metaphor. And, you know, I live within my own little prison here that I'm hoping to break out of in this 90-day challenge, which I am actually going to participate in.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, good.
Well,
we'll hear our own updates from one of the 90-day challenge people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hang on just a second. Let me get them on the air.
Okay.
Good morning, Amy and Phil.
Good morning, Tiki. How are you?
Doing great, and I've got my co-host here, Chris Bradshaw.
Good morning.
Hey, Chris.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
And Chris was actually telling folks about your daily coaching and was just musing on the prison break email that came out today, which we just both loved that metaphor.
Well, you know, you really do. I was walking to the kitchen, and I was just kind of remembering how I used to be so tired in the afternoon, and how all these people that are in our fitness challenges, they're going through these things where they feel like they're a prisoner in their own body. And you forget when you start getting healthier. And I don't ever want to, you know, I don't ever want to forget how it felt to, you know, be that way, because I don't ever want to go back there, you know.
Right. Well, you know, for those who didn't have the opportunity either to listen to our initial show back in February or who aren't aficionados of NBC's Biggest Loser, can you just give us the background of what made you guys decide to do it? Because, you know, looking back at your original pictures, that had to be a pretty big step for you guys to take.
Well, I mean, we felt like we had conquered so many areas of our life. You know, we had a business to fail, and then we kind of picked ourselves up from that failure and became the top agents in our company. And we had a son that was diagnosed with autism, our youngest son, and we dealt with that situation, and we're kind of getting on top of that. And then the last thing we were left with here was, you know, the fact that we were both morbidly obese. I mean, we had used food to comfort us through those trying situations, and now we were left with all this weight. And I would sit and watch the television show and just cry because I could see these people that were doing what I wanted to do. I wanted to be strong. I wanted to be, you know, on top of this weight thing. And I just thought, wow, wouldn't it be really neat to be in that kind of situation where you could just totally block the world out and focus on losing weight. And so we went to a casting call and tried out, and I actually kind of drug Philip there on Valentine's weekend last year.
He enticed me with with food.
So we're going to go stay in a hotel room, have nice dinners out, and I think that's why he went. He didn't realize he was going to be wrangled into a casting call. But and lo and behold, a couple months later, we found ourselves on a ranch in California with no connection to the outside world.
So just to let everybody know, we were on the show, actually. We were out there about 2.5 months, which was very difficult. And then we were home getting ready for the finale, they call it, which happened December 16th. We were home for 4.5 months. So we actually did very, very well on both parts, you know, at the show and at home. So I lost 151 pounds, and Amy lost 105. So
wow.
She barely edged me out on percentage. So,
but I still beat him, you know, girl power. So anyway, so that's kind of how we got going on this whole thing and how we've learned so much this last year. And we just want to pass that on to, you know, other people and help them to renovate their lives as well.
Some people come off that process and they just kind of, you know, kind of drift back into their lives, and maybe they were doing the career that they felt like they were supposed to do. But Amy and I have always had a desire to talk to people, to help people, and we feel like this show has kind of given us that platform. So that's why we're developing all this stuff. You know,
well, I had already shared before you guys got on the phone of why we decided to partner together. And, I mean, there was just such an amazing connection even before we did the first show, both when Amy and I first talked and then in all the various conversations that we have had since then. So I just thank you guys so much for being willing to step up to this this new challenge of, you know, trying to figure out how to leverage social media to help people, you know, actually, you know, achieve this legacy of leaving behind, you know, a way that our kids can see us living or the people around us, and that you guys are actually committed to, you know, really sticking with what you laid out last year.
Yeah, well, we have a new life, and we want other people to get a new life. So,
that's funny that you use the words leaving a legacy, because actually in one of my daily, I think it's the Tomorrow's Daily Email, we talk about what we put value on in our lives, and that the most valuable thing we can leave to our children is, you know, a health, you know, the legacy of health and of how to live healthy. Because your body, if your body's in check, your emotions become in check, your mind gets in check, and you can really live your dreams that you have for your life because you've got control over that area and you feel well. And so it's, you know, we save money for our kids. We get, you know, we put college funds together, but really teaching our children to be healthy and live healthy is one of the most important legacies that we can, you know, leave, really.
That is an amazing way of putting that, because people think about money. They think about all sorts of different things that they should leave for their children. And that's a beautiful way of putting that. So you've come up with a concept, guys, of the 90-day fitness challenge. Can you explain a little bit about that? And I understand that you're about halfway through. So can people jump in, or do we have to wait?
Well, actually, we have it to where when we start a new challenge with a group of people, that they can actually start at day one. That was something that was really frustrating to us. And so now if you're joining with a certain, you know, group of people, you can actually, when you go to sign up, designate which group you're starting with, and it can start at day one. But right now we're on, I think, day 54 of the first 90-day challenge that we started. And we have seen so many results. We get emails every single day from people that have had amazing results. We just recently had the mid-challenge pep rally, and we had people that had lost 34 pounds, 20 pounds. And it's not just about the weight. We have one lady that she especially touched my heart. When she walked in, I knew immediately that she had lost weight and she looked happier. But she's going through the process of getting her son diagnosed, and she just got the diagnosis of autism for her son. And I remember going back to that place of what a dark place that was, and knowing that you needed a diagnosis for your child to get him the services that he needed, but also knowing that you didn't want to accept it. So for her to be feeling at least physically healthy during this process, it's going to help her to be able to emotionally handle it. And she said before she just couldn't get a handle on the whole process, and now she's able, since she's feeling better, to feel like she can actually help him better through this process. So that really touched my heart, that it's not just about weight.
If I can tell them one of the things that we talk about when it comes to people, especially with special needs children, you wind up taking care of everyone else. And a lot of these moms, you know, we tell them, it's okay. You can take care of yourself. You're important. And you can just see when we start to tell them that, mom, you need to take care of yourself. You know, you need to put mom first sometimes, and you need to communicate with your husband and your children that, you know, mommy has to have a life too. She's special, and, you know, you guys, because she winds up putting her whole life into these kids, and I tell you what, especially when you have a special needs child, you can just get...
And it's like we're giving them permission, because sometimes moms need permission to be able to...
I think that's the best thing, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. We had a woman on the executive girlfriends group that Chris and I both participate in on Friday, and she talked this week about, she used the metaphor of when you're on the airplane and they tell you to put your own mask on first. And, you know, and she walked through a complete, you know, kind of program of how to dissect the message of what the flight attendant said. But, you know, it's just so true. And I want to take just a quick break here to thank the Barbados Tourism Authority for not only sponsoring this show, but sponsoring the 13-week series that we are heading into. And, you know, as you guys know, a vital part of any wellness program is taking time out for a little bit of relaxation and rejuvenation and even romance and, you know, to get away from the hustle and bustle of everyday routine. And, you know, what better place to get away to than Barbados? You know, just the word Barbados magically conjures up images of balmy tropical nights and soothing West Indian breezes, pristine sandy beaches that are the envy of the world. And, you know, it's one of my husband, Michael and I's favorite place to vacation. And Barbados, many people don't know, is the land of green monkeys and flying fish, quaint little rum shacks and sprawling sugarcane plantations. Barbados, for those who don't know, those who live there are called Bajans. And Barbados is clearly the land of true Bajan days and true Bajan nights. Why don't we do this? We've got a lot of people listening in online. We have got one person I see who has called in. If you would like to ask a question of Phil and Amy or tell us your own story about how you have made a real-life transformation, you can open the Solutions Live radio show panel, and there's a chat button in the center, so blogtalkradio.com/solutions-live, or you can call in at 646-727-2840. And again, if you want to just type in your question on the chat window, Chris and I will make sure that we get those questions asked. You know, let's talk a little bit about coaching, and you launched into you know, telling us some of the success stories. Why is coaching an important part of this? I mean, can you have the same success just reading the daily emails?
Well, I mean, I feel like that, you know, the daily emails is kind of like having, you know, a coach, you know, but I think it's important that if people have questions that they feel like that are not being answered through the daily emails, that they can have a kind of a line of communication with us. And so, you know, that's why we specifically answer questions and help people when they, have a place they're stuck, you know, that we can, you know, help them through that little rough patch. Because everybody is unique. Everybody's different. We all have, you know, different problems. And I know Philip has something that he would like to add to that, too.
Well, when we did our first 90-day challenge, what we realized is that the whole idea of our thing is losing weight and gaining health. The whole idea of it for so many people who are obese or who have challenges in that area is, like, overwhelming. And I could sit there and talk to somebody for hours and hours and hours and still not feel like I gave them all the knowledge that I had, but then they're only going to retain so much of it. So we kind of had the idea, when we introduce our 90-day challenge to people, say, what can you do in 90 days, you know, 90 days for the rest of your life, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you something daily to keep you inspired, to keep you motivated, to train you or to teach you. Just like if I ask you to go out and run a marathon today, you would have difficulty, obviously. Most people could not do it. But if I said, we're going to run a marathon a year and a half from now, you would start implementing daily things in your life, and you would put together a training routine so that a year and a half from now, you would probably be able to do that marathon. So I said, how do you eat an elephant? You eat an elephant one bite at a time. So we're going to take what we've learned, a lot of things we've learned, and a lot of things that just kind of inspire us and motivate us to keep on this journey of health, and we're going to break it up into daily emails. And we hope that everyone reads them, and we hope that they get something out of them. And we know that as we went through, it's as much an emotional and a mental and a spiritual thing. Usually food is tied to something for people because food is just energy. You just need it to live. But before we got into that mindset, we had all these other things that we mixed up with food. So that's kind of the idea that most people would take a big book and they go, oh, I'm going to read that, and they have the best intentions, but they sit it on the shelf. And our emails are designed, you know, to give you something that you can take every day and just enhance your life with them. And that's what we hope, that it won't take you but a few minutes, and it starts first thing you say, oh, yeah, that's something that can help me today. So just changing mindsets, one, and changing, you know, habits and changing things just one thing at a time.
That's the only way to do it. Take that mountain and turn it into little bite-sized, mouse-sized.
Little bite-sized.
Yes.
Mini goals. Yes, mini goals. And we've had people, I'm telling you, if you could read the emails that we've had, it has actually basically amazed us. We had a lady that we talked to after 40-something days. It was about a week and a half ago. We kind of had a little get-together here for the people locally who had decided to do our challenge. And out of, she had lost, I think, 32 pounds at that point. But just the vigor, like Amy was saying, and the light in her eyes is amazing. And just the way people carry themselves, the way they talk. And like Amy was just saying a second ago, it's not just about the weight. It's really, like I'm telling you, this is a journey to health. This is we're teaching people, look, drink your water. Why drink water? You know, and we tell them why. And
there was one lady there that is not even really overweight, but she was on blood pressure medicine, and her doctor said, there's no way you're going to be off this blood pressure medicine just through diet. Well, she
goes, I think I'm going to beg to differ with that. So
yeah,
she started doing our strategies.
And she decided not that we would recommend this, but she decided to stop taking it because then she went to the doctor and they tested her and they said, oh, the medicine must be working. Your blood pressure's fine. And she's like, I haven't taken it in 3 weeks.
She just adjusted her diet and she started doing some of the things that, you know, we were talking about. And, you know, she got that motivation and she found that inspiration. That's one of the things Amy and I talk about, is that on the ranch we would get, you know, the poo-poo beat out of us in the gym, but right at that very moment when you felt like you couldn't go any further, I had both trainers, but I remember especially Bob in the beginning, because that's when it's so, so tough, getting over those mental hurdles and seeing yourself as an athlete when, you know, you've never seen yourself that way before. And he would get down and he would say, you can do this. The power to change is within you, and you are the one that's going to make this happen. He goes, you're strong, you know, and he would do it outside of earshot of everybody else, but he would do it right to you in your ear. Right when you were laying in a puddle on the ground and you didn't feel like you could go any further, he would say, I'm not the one that's doing this. And I remember about 7 weeks in on the show, something emotionally happened to me, and I realized that the power to do this is within me, and I can do this. I'm the one that put me in this situation, and I'm the one that can get me out of this. You know, obviously with support and friends, and I feel like with God's help. But But I'm the one that has to be on that treadmill. I'm the one that has to make the change. So he gave me the, he gave me that empowerment that I felt like I needed at that moment. So we want to pass that on to people, and that's what we feel like it's all about.
Those are wonderful coaching and success stories. And what your coach gave to you, you're able to now, exactly. So, Amy, how about you? Phil has some wonderful stories. How about you? And what would you tell somebody who's just trying to start their plan, just like Phil had that one moment of insight?
Can you hear her?
No, we can't. I don't think we can.
Yeah, we're not hearing her, Phil.
Okay, hold on. Her phone died.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay, I'm back.
Did you hear me, Amy?
Yeah, it's
I heard
it's
you. It's technical difficulties over here, but
that's okay. We understand.
Anyway,
we just have about 3 minutes left, Amy. So if we can just crystallize on the what you would tell people starting out, what's the one thing they need to focus on?
Okay. Yes, I think that people should realize that they don't have to have an aha moment. They don't have to have a reality television show. They don't have to have all these things that maybe in their mind they have set up that they need. They need to just make one change at a time. They need to eat people are afraid to eat because they think, well, the food is what makes, you fat or whatever. But it's so important to look at food in a mindset of fuel and to eat every 3 or 4 hours just so that you keep that car running. And I know the girl living with us is our assistant, and she has been with us for a little over 3 weeks. She's lost 22 pounds just because she started eating. I mean, we're on her all the time. Did you eat? And, in your mind you go, well, I can't eat. I'll gain weight. But that is actually what causes your metabolism to run faster so that your body can lose the weight. So
you're not a camel.
You're not a camel. You have to eat.
We have time for one question. We've got someone on the phone who has a question. Hang on 1 second. Area code 705. Area code 705, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Phil and Amy? Okay, we just have a lurker. We love lurkers here on Solutions Live. All right, well, you guys, I just am so, so excited about doing this show with you. We are going to have different formats each week. We may be interviewing folks 1 week, and another week it may just be Chris and I chatting with Phil and Amy about their recommendations for the top tips for the week of what we need to do. And we will be launching our own Solutions Live real-life renovations challenge. We will be getting out information about that in the next week or so. And we would love to have our listeners join us in that challenge. I am definitely going to join in the challenge. I've been talking about it for way too long. It's time to do it. And I want to thank you guys so much. And again, I just would like to mention our sponsor one last time. The Barbados Tourism Authority has been gracious enough to sponsor this show and make this possible for us. And what they would love for you to know about Barbados is that you come and discover the best that Barbados has to offer. They have just launched a special Best of Barbados promotion. Their website is www.visitbarbados.org. You can save up to $300 on airfare and get your first night free when booking 7 nights minimum at participating hotels. They have a 5-night minimum at the all-inclusive resorts that include all of your food and entertainment. You can start your day off in paradise with free daily breakfast, then explore the best of Barbados. They have a buy one and get a second at a half-price admission to participating local attractions. You can also sample the tropical fare with a free Barbados dining card and then go island with a $25 Oyston's fish fry dinner voucher. Book by April 1st, visit your local travel agent, or their website at visitbarbados.org for further details. Thanks to the Barbados Tourism Authority, and thank you so much, Phil and Amy. I can't wait for next week, and I can't wait to get started on the challenge.
Me either. It's going to be so fun. Thanks for having us in this venture.
Yes.
Okay, terrific. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I will talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks.
Bye now.
Okay, take care. Okay, Chris, shifting gears, and actually that is a great lead-in for our next sponsor. The next three segments of our show are sponsored today by the Vintage Racing League, and I will tell you more about that at the break. But right now I am going to bring our next speaker on the air, and we have just a treat for everyone. If you are stuck in a corporate job, and it has just drained everything out of you, I know it's tough times. This segment is about financial health. And when I talked to Dan Clements yesterday about his book, Escape 101, I was really intrigued at this whole notion of not only taking a sabbatical, because that's always intrigued me, but that it might be possible even in these tough financial times. So welcome, Dan.
Oh, thanks for having me. Here I am.
Great. Well, Chris Bradshaw is with me. She's out of Dallas, Texas, and you're in Canada. Is that right?
That's right.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chris. It's quite a bit cooler here, I would imagine, than where you are.
Yeah, quite a bit. We're in the 70s today.
Oh. Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that.
Well, there are nonstop flights from Toronto to Tampa. I do know that.
That could just be my next sabbatical. All right.
There you go.
Well, I would love first to hear the story of how you came to the point where you felt you needed to write a book about this subject.
Sure. We had always been, I guess we got the travel bug early on, so sort of, you know, taking off for periods of a time was something that that we started early in. And kept up, and it always struck me we would always meet people sort of when we were back in our real lives, I guess, at home, and who would say, "Oh, I'd love to do that. I'd love to spend 6 months in Italy, or I'd love to, you know, go to Paris, or I'd love to, you know, take 3 months and just live on a tropical island somewhere." But I could never do it, and it always seemed so strange to me that they thought they could never do it because there was nothing special about us at all, other than we really wanted to, and. It was always in the back of my mind that maybe there was a way to help people do this. And we, you know, a number of years ago, we were traveling through Central America, and we had stopped in Guatemala to visit the Mayan ruins in Tikal, which is this really remarkable place of this ancient Mayan city. You really sort of feel like you're Indiana Jones when you're there. And we met this family, and we were still pretty footloose and fancy free. You know, we had no mortgages, no kids, that kind of thing. And but we met this family, and you know, a couple and their kids, maybe 8 or 10 years old, and they had sort of sold everything back home, put their stuff in storage, and taken off for over a year, and they were just traveling around from place to place with their kids, and a couple of things struck me. One is that, you know, they were so happy, which was pretty neat to see, and the other thing was that they had done this with a lot of things working against them that most people think they couldn't overcome, and I got talking to them, and the guy said something to me that really was the seed of the book. And he said, you know, I said, "Wasn't it hard to leave? You know, you've got all these mortgages and careers and kids." And he said, "Leaving wasn't hard. It was thinking about leaving that was hard." And that really stuck with me, that thought. And it was so true, you know, that it's the mental obstacles of the advance part before you actually go. That's the really hard part, the mental, emotional. And that was where I thought, that's what people need the help with to sort of make the change to do a sabbatical, and there wasn't really anything out there about that. So that's what started the book.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, Dan, because when I met my husband, he had actually just come back from a 2-year sabbatical, which I don't think he ever thought he would actually be gone that long. He went to Costa Rica to study Spanish. and you know, was unencumbered, had sold his house, and you know, put the things that he wanted to keep in storage, and ended up he did spend time in Guatemala, and his stories about Tikal are just amazing. So I'm going to need to get the two of you together. But you know, he had similar experiences. He ran across people from all over the world. And, you know, he spent his time doing things like volunteering, you know, with Peace Corps groups, you know, who were, you know, building out things in villages and really just helping, you know, the local community. And, you know, I remember just, you know, hearing him tell that story actually on the night that we met. And, you know, I was just so enthralled with the fact that this man, you know, and at the time he was 39, and, you know, I just thought what a great thing that he could do that. And, you know, it actually, I think, contributed a lot to the fact that I married him 2 months later, and 19 years later, you know, we're still very, very happily married. So that wanderlust in him has not gone away, and I absolutely love hearing the stories about families who can do this. And, you know, we're currently encumbered because his mother is still living, and that's not an encumbrance. It's actually a real blessing for us because she lives across the street. But I often think of, you know, once she's gone, boy, I would love to just take off with these kids. And I can, he's listening to the show downstairs, and I'm pretty sure he's nodding his head.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a great thing to do, and it's wonderful with kids. It really is. They're remarkable in their ability to do amazing things on the road.
So I'm listening, and this is Chris, and let's say that I do have the kids, and I'm hearing you say these things, and they sound great, but I'm sorry, I just don't get it, right? It's like, how do you pick up two kids or even your own self and walk out and do that?
It's,
how do you get past that? It's the thinking or the preparation part.
Yeah, I think sabbatical, I mean, the challenge for people and for us included is that, you know, as humans, we tend to get really focused on the how of things. We want the plan. We love the roadmap. Like, how exactly am I going to do this? And what is it going to look like? And what are the steps I follow? Particularly for people who have chosen a corporate path in their career, because those things tend to come somewhat prepackaged, and sabbaticals don't really come that way. So, you know, one of the first steps is to kind of step back from that sort of auto-planning mechanism in your mind and just start to think, instead of about the how, about the whys and the whats. You know, what would be so great about your sabbatical, and why do you want to do it, and what do you want to do on it, and create that picture. That's kind of the first step, and then for us, it's always from there getting into a series of very tiny steps, of small commitments. In you know, we can break these down if you want to, but that gradually move you from a place of being in like, oh my gosh, how would this ever work, to a place where it becomes slowly almost easier to leave than it is to stay, because you've gradually put all the pieces in place. And that's kind of what the book is about.
There's a lot. That sounds like a lot of planning.
It is kind of that. I think the secret is to not be overwhelmed by it right up front, and to allow yourself to trust that you may not see how it's going to work right now, but that if you get started in small steps, and you know, we can look at some of those small steps and go through them in the book a bit more. The plan will gradually bring itself into focus.
Well, let's talk about the financial side right now, because, you know, I think particularly at this moment, you know, and I'm quite sure the Canadian economy isn't a whole lot healthier than the U.S. economy right now. You know, we've got a lot of folks who have watched their retirements, you know, dwindle pretty substantially if they had a lot of money in the stock market. Or even if they had money in mutual funds that were heavily dependent on the stock market. And, you know, perhaps they had thought, you know, oh, someday I'll do that. And maybe it was tied to retirement, and they never actually thought about it being possible. What do you tell people from a financial perspective about how much it costs to take a sabbatical? Because I noticed in your website, you know, you talk about how it may not cost as much as you think.
Absolutely. It certainly can costs a lot. If you want to spend 6 months in a five-star resort, that can be an expensive way to spend your time. But
but it sounds great.
It sounds fantastic, and I would love it too. So one of the first steps on the financial side is to kind of open your mind to this idea that maybe it doesn't have to cost as much as you think. To give you an example, our last sort of escape, our last career break was 5 months in Paraguay, South America. We went down there with our daughter, who was 5 years old at the time. And, you know, we did some traveling, but we also spent a lot of time working in a small community with homeless kids. So it was a really amazing time for us and our family. And because of the work we were doing down there, which never really felt like work, we could stay there, and we just kind of pitched into the food budget. So the cost of the whole thing was $250 a month, including food, accommodation, cell phone, and internet access, for our whole family.
Wow.
That was a lot cheaper than living here in Canada and pretty much anywhere in North America.
Wow.
So there's a real-life example, and there's examples on the website, too, at escape101.com of a couple of people who are sort of, one of them actually calls herself the professional hobo, who are constantly traveling, and it's cheaper than the average life in North America. So that's kind of where things start, is this idea that, okay, maybe it's not as expensive as I think. The next step for any, you know, particularly for your listeners who are in that corporate groove, and maybe it's become a corporate grind, and they'd really love to get away, but they're thinking because of the economy right now that they should just put their heads down, toe the line, and sort of look for the light at the end of the tunnel and keep on rolling. It's the non-intuitive reality here is that this is if you're on that track, this is a great time to look at an extended time off, at a sabbatical. Employers are faced with this challenge of cutting costs. And one of the easiest ways to cut costs, of course, is to sort of get rid of people. But at the same time, they hate the idea of losing great talent. And so a recession is the absolute best time to start that negotiating process, to go to an employer and say, look, what if I kind of fall off the map here for a little while, for 6 months, 3 months, for a year? The employer gets the benefit of cutting their costs, but they can keep your job so that when you come back, they've still kept the talent, but they've got their costs down. It's a great time. Employers are very approachable right now about this kind of thing. Unlike in boom times where they're thinking, hey, we just need you here to crank widgets or to do your job. So it's a great time to start with the process.
That's a beautiful idea. And that would be, yes.
I was just going to say, you know, Chris and I have had a lot of dialogue about this, that we work with a number of women in the travel industry, and out of the group that we have put together, which we call the Executive Girlfriends Group, over 20% of them are currently in transition. And we have collectively adopted the term sabbatical as an alternative to saying that you're out of work, because when you're out of work, people say, oh, you know, I'm really sorry, you know, how can I help you? And let me know how it goes for you.
Yeah.
Versus when somebody says, you know, I'm on sabbatical right now and, you know, doing some reinvention and trying to figure out where I do want to go. And the response to that is, oh, man, I've always wanted to do that. And so it's been a real emotional boost for the women in our group that have adopted that. Dan, you know, I know as you were preparing to write the book that you must have run across people who weren't just wanting to take a break from a job and go back to that same job, but who really were at a place in their lives where they were questioning whether they did need to do near total reinvention.
Absolutely, lots of them, and that's certainly the neat thing about sabbaticals is the challenge in sabbaticals kind of mirrors what happens in any transition in your life, whether it's a career change or starting a business or going through a change in a relationship. You know, when you think about it before it happens, it seems kind of scary, and when you go through it, there are some hurdles and challenges, and then when you look back on it, you think, wow, that was a real gift. That was the greatest decision I ever made. And sabbaticals tend to mirror those larger transitions in life as well. And we've met all kinds of people who were really wondering, and the only way for them to get the perspective they needed to make the decision about whether they should continue that career or continue our relationship or any other big decision was to get that gift of perspective, which is what a sabbatical offers you. So it's the best way to get a clear head to make a difficult life decision.
Chris, did you want to chime in?
You know, I have found myself on, you're defining a sabbatical usually as travel, is that correct?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can do with your time off, but I think that kind of strikes a chord with people is that it's about getting away.
So it's that, it's the gap year, if you will, but at different times of your life.
Yeah, I mean, often they're like gap years for grown-ups.
Gap year three. Exactly. Which, you know, gap year was created, I guess, so that children would appreciate and know what kind, where they wanted to head after college or before college or something like that. Can't remember when it happens. And to get your mind straight or see what the world is like. So I have often found myself, when you're forced to, do you discuss during your book about when you're like forced into this time off, like people are finding themselves now? How do they, you know, they didn't have the time to plan. So does planning take months, or is it really just all about a mind shift, and can that happen quickly?
I think it can happen really quickly. To give you an example, our last sabbatical, we started the kind of, we knew it was coming in the sense that before our daughter was born, we had thought, wow, so here's this big change coming in our life. Are we still going to do what, are we still going to take time off and travel and do those things? And we thought, yeah, we sure are. So we made a commitment that every 5 years we would take our daughter on a sabbatical.
Oh,
and so
wow.
That sabbatical 2 years ago to Paraguay was the sort of first five-year mark. And so we knew it was coming, but until about 3 months before we left, we didn't know where we were going to go or what we were going to do. And we had kind of, as tends to happen, had some, you know, some financial surprises, and we didn't have the money put aside that we thought we would for the sabbatical. So we were sort of in a predicament similar to what you're describing, is that all of a sudden we're not far off from our time to leave, and we don't really have the money we need to do what we wanted to do. We ended up sort of putting out the feelers and talking to people, and we met a missionary, was basically what it came down to, who was doing some great work in South America, and we basically decided over coffee and a handshake that we would sort of jump on his bandwagon. And we weren't associated with a church at all, but we were very open-minded, and we just knew that they were doing great work. So that was an example of how you can sort of go from 0 to 60 overnight.
Exactly.
Yeah,
well, I'd like to talk a little bit about, some of the resources that people need to, you know, help them ferret out those opportunities. But I want to just take a quick commercial break. I mentioned at the beginning of the segment that we have a new sponsor, the Vintage Racing League. And for those who are into the passion and power and excitement and nostalgia of vintage car racing, this new community has emerged. And they've actually built some pretty awesome technology that in many ways surpasses what Facebook has done. And the URL is thevintageracingleague.com. Check it out, and if your passion is racing, you will love the vintage racing approach. Okay, Dan, let's shift just a little bit to talk about, okay, I've figured it out, I've committed, I've set a timeline, I actually have the money that I think it's going to take both to keep things going at home if I'm not going the route of selling everything that I have.
Right.
Does your book actually provide a set of resources or recommendations of how do I start figuring out, you know, again, if travel is the catalyst to this, and if I have decided that I want to do, you know, some volunteering to expose my 8 and 10-year-old to what it's like to build a school in the Dominican Republic or whatever it is that I want to do, how do I get started on that part of narrowing it down?
Well, what we do in the book, we have some resources that we mentioned, and certainly we tend to use the blog a bit more for that. So you can go to escape101.com and sort of discover other people that are doing this and the resources they're using. But what we focus on in the book is a process for finding what I call your sabbatical opportunity. So part of what made our last trip possible and successful was that we found a great opportunity, one that was a fit for us with what we wanted to do with our time, and one that was affordable. And in essence, we're really looking at basically a networking approach, which is kind of a scary word for some people, but it's really not about that. It's more about talking about your sabbatical with people and what you want to do. So the first kind of step in that process in finding your sabbatical opportunity is really to kind of get clear about what you want. There are as many sabbatical possibilities out there as there are sort of grains of sand on the beach. So getting clear about narrowing down the focus a little bit about what you might be looking for. Some people are interested in learning a new language, and they have a language in mind. And other people are interested in spending time working with endangered species, or spending time drinking wine in France, or living on a beach. So narrowing that focus down and putting it into basically kind of a one-sentence thing, like, I would like to spend 6 months learning Spanish in another country. Boom. And if you have a specific country in mind, even better, but some flexibility helps. That sort of little, basically, and for salespeople, they would call it the elevator speech, but you don't want to, I don't want people to think this is a sales job. That allows you to basically spread the word to people. What I always think is that the perfect sabbatical opportunity, which is maybe, you hear about them all the time. They're the people that, a friend of a friend who is looking after someone's beach house for free. I think, wow, how did that happen? That sounds great. Or they somehow found an opportunity delivering sailboats from Florida to the Caribbean. Wow.
Sign me up.
Yeah, exactly. And
I can hear my husband saying that for sure.
Exactly. And they sound fantastic. But the reality is those opportunities, and the opportunity for you, for the people that are listening, are only usually 2 or 3 degrees of separation away. They're kind of a friend of a friend away, or a contact of a friend of a coworker away. And so finding those great opportunities, which almost always tend to be less expensive and a lot more exciting, is basically a job about deciding what it is you want and getting the word out there and talking to people and start spreading the word. And eventually you'd be surprised. If you go out and talk to 10 people and say you would like to go to Africa, 8 of them will know somebody who has a connection in the country, or who lives there, who's been there, who's works there, or has worked there. And so it's just about getting that word out there. And that, at the same time as opening up opportunities for your sabbatical, also helps with that, what we were speaking about earlier, about those small commitments that move you closer and closer to leaving. So that's really about what finding your opportunity is about.
And Dan, are you a big social networker online?
A little bit. Certainly I'm well versed in them, in the Facebooks and the Twitters and of the world. I'm also a huge life balance proponent. So I try and use the tools, but also try and keep them from consuming my life, which is always that balance. But I'm more and more discovering that, things like Facebook and LinkedIn are incredible ways to find things that you need. And really, that's kind of what your sabbatical opportunity is about. If you have a large Facebook group and you, if you have a lot of friends or connections in a social networking group, and you put the word out there, but as specifically as you can in what you're looking for, you will get responses. There's no doubt about it.
Hmm. Interesting. So tell us about your business, what you do when you're not busy being off on sabbatical, or are you writing a new book? What's on your personal horizon?
I'm always writing, so there's always kind of something on the horizon book-wise in that regard. And my wife and I also run a naturopathic medical clinic here in our town. That was part of the genesis of the of Escape 101 as well, is that we had finally reached this point in our life where we had businesses and we had jobs and we had a child and we had a mortgage, and we felt that we were finally encumbered enough that if we could escape doing that, then maybe anyone could. So that's kind of what's on our plate, and we're looking forward to our next sabbatical, which is planned to be somewhere in Africa in 2012. We'll probably do a couple of short escapes before then, but that'll be a good long one.
Well, that sounds fabulous. That's someplace I have always wanted to go. And we had on the show a couple of weeks ago, Ann Lair, who wrote a book. She wrote a number of leadership books, but she ran a company called Safaris for the Soul. And when I heard about that, I mean, that just sparked that thing in me that said, oh,
what a great
I've got to
name.
Do that.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Right, right. So, I would like for my kids to be a little bit older, because I do think that there are some age restrictions with most of the safari companies. But definitely that is on my list of things to do and places to go.
Absolutely, and your kids will... they will amaze you and delight you when you're on a trip like that.
Well, they have been definitely bugging us. I mean, we adopted a little boy from Russia 5 years ago, and our daughter, who was five at the time, went with us to Russia to pick him up. And I would say, you know, that has just been, the trip to remember of all of the trips. And my husband and I have traveled pretty extensively. I've personally been in the travel industry for 30 years, which has afforded me a lot of benefits. 10 of those were with American Airlines. So, you know, those were the days when you could, as an employee, hop on an airplane first class for $10. Those days are gone, by the way.
Yeah.
Working for an airline isn't quite as glamorous as
those were great days, though.
Yeah, they were great days. So, telling our kids to go work for the airlines these days isn't such a great way to get flight benefits, but my parents enjoyed it when they were living.
Yeah, traveling with kids is really wonderful, and I would urge anyone who's listening to not wait until their kids are gone. It's probably one of the big messages in the book as well, in the part about traveling with children, is that it's easy to sort of save these things for your retirement, but there's a real magic in doing it with your kids. So if you can find a way to do it, and our belief is that you definitely can, then do your kids a favor and don't wait until they're gone.
Well, one of the things my husband and I have talked about, because we spent the last 2.5 years building a technology company that built out a web capability for people who want to plan trips by car. And that product is roadescapes.com. And, you know, I've said, you know, having built that, you know, we really owe it to ourselves to just get in the car this summer and just go. And, you know, not necessarily have everything planned out and not even have a destination, but just have things that we know we want to do together. And whether that's, you know, go to Civil War battlefields in the Southeast or, you know, discover wineries in the Northeast, you know, all different kinds of things. And that's really what was behind the creation of that product. And I think, again, for kids to actually see the countryside versus, flying, 40,000 feet over over the U.S. and, just seeing airports and car rentals is just a real treat. And I think most of us, certainly in our generation, Chris and I are both of the same vintage. When we were growing up, that's what our parents did. And they threw us in the car, and, you know, we didn't have to wear seat belts. We didn't have air conditioning. And in my car, we didn't even have a radio. So there was lots of singing and game playing and sitting in the back of the station wagon looking out the back. And I think that's a cool sabbatical. So maybe we need to have a specific discussion about car sabbaticals, Dan. I think that would be cool, too.
Well, yeah, you don't have to get on a plane. You don't have to see the world
Exactly. Well, we've got a pretty big country, and certainly with Canada thrown into the mix, there's an awful lot to see and do. Well, Dan, I really appreciate you being on the show, and I'm hoping we'll get a chance to talk again soon. I know my husband and I are going to be devouring your book and planning out when we can take our kids on sabbatical. I just think certainly with our new flexibility with this radio show, I can do it from anywhere.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thank you, Dan.
Great. Okay, and once again, I would like to thank our new sponsor, the Vintage Racing League, an incredible community for those of you who are passionate about the nostalgia of vintage racing. And there are more opportunities to see vintage car races than I even knew were possible before I talked yesterday to Stephen, who is the founder and CEO of the Vintage Racing League. And I knew him when he was doing executive placement, and it was funny. I was talking to him yesterday, Chris. He lives in Dallas, and I was talking to him about you know, what's going on now with our economy. And I told him that we were doing this spot on sabbaticals, and he said that, you know, a lot of executives are actually stepping back from, you know, the high powered corporate role and deciding to do that. So I need to introduce you to him. He's a fascinating individual. Well, we are ready to welcome our next guest. And, you know, speaking of doing things on purpose, you know, which is basically what Dan said, that if you set out to actually take the time off, and whether it is just to take a break and a breather, or whether it is actually to figure out how to reinvent yourself or to put some purpose in your life, our next guest, Kevin McCarthy, has a real passion for that. Welcome, Kevin.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, I want to introduce you to my co-host, Chris Bradshaw, one of my dearest friends from Dallas, Texas.
Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Kevin.
How are you doing?
Wonderful.
Good.
I'm excited about you, your website, on-purpose.com, and the On Purpose Person, and looking forward to hearing more about that.
Well,
Kevin, one of the things I always like to ask our authors, because you know, many of them have other businesses, whether it's coaching or consulting, you know, or perhaps you know, they're still with a larger corporation, is how did you get to the place where you knew you had to write your first book?
I felt a heavy burden on me. It's probably the best way to describe it. I was kind of a student of self-help literature, starting all the way back to when I was a little kid. I mean, I actually, you know, was just fascinated by people and all those sorts of things. But basically, when I got into my early 30s, I really started trying to discern a process where I could get some real clarity in my life. And in essence, I began to mix that along with a number of, you know, life experiences. Things happen. You have your, what a friend of mine calls them, AFGEs, which is an acronym for another frigging growing experience. So, you know, I'd have these AFGEs would come along, and I'd try to put them into context, and I didn't really have a very good context or a way to look at it, and so I really started to explore it. And I also had clients of mine, because I was doing, I was in commercial real estate, actually was a real estate advisor for small to medium-sized corporations, and I began to migrate into, from the real estate to the business planning, and then ultimately into the life planning piece. And this is all in back in the, you know, the mid-80s, when nobody was doing stuff like that. Today, a lot of people are doing things like that. And basically, I just felt like I had finally figured out a process to help people get there. And it was just, how do you share this? I mean, there's only so many hours in the day that one can do it. And so I started, my wife called it my mistress. I started slipping away at night with my little Macintosh computer. Again, I was on a Mac back in the 80s, so I was sort of, you know, on the front end of that curve as well. But,
oh, I knew we had something in common.
Yeah.
I am Mac chicky.
Oh, there you are. And so anyway, I would steal away at night from 10 o'clock at night until 3 o'clock in the morning, because I still had my business that I was still trying to do during the day. And I would sort of pound away on my Macintosh, putting together this little book. And I printed it up, gave off copies to some friends, and from there they said, can you get a cover on it? Could you do this? Could you, you know, I want to share it with some people. And lo and behold, a book was produced. And eventually, my story is the opposite of most people. I actually had 6 publishers who found the book from readers and called me with unsolicited offers, all within about a 3-month time period, and said, we want to publish your book. And it was like,
wow.
I said to my wife, gee, I guess I'm supposed to publish this.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
great.
It was almost like being discovered at the corner pharmacy.
Right.
You know, an actor being discovered at the corner pharmacy. So in many ways, I was very fortunate and blessed for that to happen. But it was a burden that I just needed to get rid of.
So I have heard other people describe it as, you know, they couldn't sleep. The ideas just wouldn't go away. And
I think of it as a holy discontentment.
Yes.
It's just sort of pressing on you, and you just feel like you got to do something with it.
Right. Yeah, I've got a bunch of those ideas in a little book that I carry around with me, and, you know, chapter titles come to me, and I can just envision, you know, what it's going to look like. So I am looking forward to that time in my life, and maybe it's my sabbatical that I will take that will allow me to actually write that book that's inside of me. Tell us a little bit about the whole process of going from just kind of being, you know, tossed around by what happens to us in life to really attacking it in an on-purpose way.
Well, I actually have a very well-defined process for that, and I can kind of give you a little bit of a piece of it. But if you think of it as like an hourglass, at the top of the hourglass, if you want to think of it as confusion, chaos and confusion. And now we don't live in chaos, but we have states of chaos and confusion. And that's sort of state one. And what you were trying to do is then move to the next state, which is just between confusion and clarity. That's frankly where most people are. They're just sort of, life's not all bad. They're functional and they're kind of confused about things, but they're really not clear. What we try to do is help people really get to clarity. And then from clarity, once they have clarity, the next step is to have continuity. I'm clear about who I am. I'm clear about where I want to go with my life. I'm clear about how I want to get there. I'm clear about what's important. Now I want to build my life along that way, so I want to continuously. That way they're creating alignment with that clarity. And so,
and being authentic along the way.
Absolutely. I mean, this is when you're looking at purpose, and by the way, purpose is the point of clarity. That is really the important piece for us, is that if they understand who they are, then they are being very true to who they are in that sense. So authenticity is all over this. But thank you. That's a good point to bring up.
Well, we just interviewed Joe Pine, who wrote the book Authenticity last Tuesday, so
okay.
It's fresh on our minds.
Well, and then the fourth stage is once you have continuity and you're really living it, then you tend to be into what I call contribution, where you're really saying, wow, I've learned something, I'm there, now I want to share this with the world. And so if you go back through, there are what I call one-word strategic statements. Because basically at some level I'm a strategy guy, both for life and for business. Primarily I've been doing it in the business arena, but also in the life arena. If you're in the chaos and confusion stage, the first strategy you need to think about is creating order. What do I need to do to create order? If it's just cleaning out a closet and that gives you order and peace of mind, then do it. I mean, whatever it takes, just create order somewhere. Cleaning off your desk, whatever it might be. Then once you've got some order created and you now are saying, of the order I've created, I now need to create focus. That's the next stage between, in essence, as you move down this hourglass, you get into the point of between confusion and clarity. So, and once you've got focus, well, focus is going to get you to clarity. Then from clarity to continuity, you're now building. So that's the one-word statement there, is build. Then the next stage, as you now are down towards the bottom of the hourglass, if you will, and just as a design, what you're now doing there is you're expanding. So it's order, focus, build, and then expand. What I find is a lot of people don't want to create the order. They don't want to necessarily focus. They don't want to get to clarity, but they want to expand. They want to build and expand.
Well, and they want peace all the while.
In the midst of it, yeah, all of that in the midst of it. And you know, I think peace is obviously it's a nice place to be. But again, I think there is something to be said for living in the tension of what's going on. I mean, it keeps us alive. It keeps us going. And I'm not talking about, you know, totally stressed out or anything like that. But, you know, I don't, maybe it's just me, but I find that the people that are most alive, even when they're young or they're old, they got something happening around them. I mean, they're engaged. And if you're engaged in the world and engaged in life, there's going to be tension. And tension is how you build strength. So, you know, peace is, there's an inner peace that certainly I'm talking about. That no regard, you know, so there's two types of peace. You know, one is just sort of everything's calm around me. But the fact of the matter is the real peace that we're talking about, which is when you're on purpose, when you know who you are, where you're going, how you want to get there, what's important along the way, and you're living it out. There is a peace that sits there and says, you know what, it ain't working. It's okay. You know, times are tough. It's all right. I mean, I'm actually kind of in an interesting place like that right now myself, because last year I had a client that I did a major consulting project with that stiffed me for six figures. It just killed my little business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting here for the first time in years with debt on my business and an absolutely horrible economy, but I'm absolutely at peace knowing that I'm doing the right things. So I'm not in a panic mode. I could be, you know, 20
right.
years ago, I would have been freaking out, I'm sure.
Right, but that peace when everything isn't all right is the real holy grail, because anybody can be peaceful when everything around them is calm and
right.
in order and they're focused and you know, they're building and expanding their business. But it's when the confusion still reigns around us of the things that we can't do anything about, like the current economy. You know, I mean, we can do something about our personal economy, but you know, not the global picture.
Right. And the part of this that's interesting is when you look at your purpose, and purpose is, you know, a lot of people are looking for purpose in life, and that is only a door opening. If it's really about being on your purpose, and if purpose, the way I use purpose, is very individual, very personalized, it is God's will for your life. It is your identity in Christ. It is very profound if you take it to this deep Christian level. We don't always go there with people because not everybody's there, but the fact is if you really look at it, then if you're living on your purpose, there is a oneness with God. And that is the word shalom in the Jewish tradition is peace. And it means, you know, peace that comes from being at one with God. A lot of people think it's just a toast. But it is actually this wholeness, this oneness, and maybe a more of a New Age perspective, one might say it's sort of this oneness with the universe, if you will. From my background, I tend to look at it as oneness with God. So that is the real deep peace that's there, and we're never fully, I think, on this earth ever going to get there. So the tension's always going to be there. But the fact of the matter is, I still have my anxious moments where I'd like to, you know, just rip the eyeballs out of this guy that sort of stiffed me for this money. And then I just have to sit there and say, wait a minute, this is a time to practice forgiveness.
Right.
You know, it's...
Absolutely.
There's a reason why it's here. I don't want to let that bitter root take hold in my life. I once heard, I don't know who said it, but it's like taking poison and expecting somebody else to die. It just doesn't work.
Wow, that is a powerful picture. That is a powerful picture, Kevin. And how often do we do that? I mean, I describe it as standing in front of an elevator panel and, you know, pressing the down button. And, you know, not only do you decide to go down, but you take everyone else down with you. And then you're surprised that you're in the basement. And,
yeah.
You know,
I like
you,
that.
And you have a choice. You know, to press the up button, even if things around you, you know, are going down. And I think that's where we are in the economy today. And you know, if you are a news addict, I mean, we tell our guests all the time, stop watching the news. You know, if it's depressing you, don't press the down button every day. And, you know, worse yet, there are a whole lot of people. And I think some of our listeners might be in this place where it's not that they've pressed the up or the down button, but they're paralyzed by the current circumstances. And they're standing and looking at the elevator panel and then wondering why they haven't gotten anywhere. And again, those simple metaphors, you know, are sometimes the easiest way to get a point across, because they create that visual image that the next time you're standing in front of an elevator, you'll remember that, not just about, you know, going up or down within the building, but in your own life. And I'll tell you, the poison one, I'm gonna write that one down, because that is so unbelievable. And I've seen, you know, more people poisoned by just being so angry about what has happened to them, and rather than realizing that they have a choice of receiving that or turning it around and finding love in the circumstance, which is really, you know, at the heart of the gospel that you know, that you're describing. Because it isn't about religion, and it isn't about you know, perhaps even what we've learned about it in the past, but it is about loving even people who stiff you for six figures, and
right.
That's hard.
Yep. So anyway, in fact, it's interesting because of the in the on-purpose person, I use a light switch to describe that as the symbol of an on-purpose person, because it's binary. It's you're saying going up or down, and I'm saying like a light switch. I often tell people, pretend like you have a light switch on your heart, because purpose is a matter of the heart. If you have a light switch on your heart, and what happens is you can turn this light switch up, or you can turn it down. You can go on purpose, or you can go off the purpose, kind of like a light switch. And in many ways, what's happening is that to have a light switch or to see a light switch, you know that ultimately needs to be connected to something, which are wires and electricity and a transformer and all of those things to give you that power. And you can choose to turn that power off, or you can turn it on. And the other thing I like to do is I tell people, a lot of times, in fact, I've done this in speaking engagements, which is kind of fun, is I'll get somebody out of the audience. I'll say, pretend like you've got a light switch in your heart. And now, do you know the song, This Little Light of Mine? You know, that goes, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. And that what I do is I have them sing that song, and then I hurl insults at them. And they just start to laugh, because they just kind of get this sense of like, you know, I'm sitting here singing this little diddly, and you can't touch me. And then what I'll do, because I've got a microphone, I'm kind of overwhelming them. Then I'll have a couple of their friends come up, and they'll sing This Little Light of Mine, and they in turn begin to compete with me with the microphone, and then I have the whole audience sing This Little Light of Mine, and I'm buried out. And what I'm in essence saying is, you can choose to surround your people who are going to turn your light switch on, because a lot of people walk around with their hands out trying to turn your light switch off and take you off purpose. But there's both an inner strength we need to have, and an understanding of who we are, and an inner accountability. But we need to also have people around us who are going to walk up and turn on their light switch. I mean, it's kind of like what you're doing with Blog Talk Radio and just with Solutions Live, is you're basically sitting there saying, look, if you're down, tune in. Listen to one of these shows. It's a way to get your light switch on, even if you don't have to have somebody around you. Tune in anytime, any show, and you're going to have your light switch go on.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
You've just written our new tagline.
If
you're down, tune in.
There you go.
Wordsmith and branding type guy a lot of the times for clients, so it's not unusual.
So, Kevin, can you define purpose in your context? Because sometimes people say, well, I'm supposed to know what kind of job I'm supposed to have, or I'm supposed to know that my purpose is to be a mother. Supposed to. So, what do you mean by?
Okay, yeah, that's a great question, because the one of the core things I discovered back in the 80s, whenever I was doing this work as a strategy guy, was that the core words of purpose, vision, mission, and values are very confused. We have a Tower of Babel,
yeah.
A present day Tower of Babel that exists, because everybody uses the words differently. So what I did is I said I want to standardize it, but I really want to think through what do these words mean. So purpose. And I can put it in a number of different ways. But first, purpose answers the question, why am I here? It's a matter of the heart. It's our past, our present, and our future into eternity. It's our spiritual DNA, okay? And so there's a very important part of why purpose is very different. Vision is where we're going. It's in our mind's eye. And vision is something that's going to be happening in the future. We can see it, we can realize it, and then it becomes in our past. But there are some visions. For instance, I call one of my visions for the business is the on-purpose planet where every person is on purpose. As each of you would become an on-purpose person, then I can say, wow, that's great. They become an on-purpose person. But the fact of the matter is to see the world converted that way, every time a baby's born, it's never going to be realized. You start all over. So that's a vision that's finite as well as infinite. And then missions are the roles we're in. Those are the day-to-day activities. Like most people are saying, gee, I think I know my purpose in life. I should be a school teacher or I'm a mom. That's not a purpose. That's a role. And it's a role through which your purpose is being expressed. Again, if you go back to the light switch, it's kind of like saying, here's electricity, this spiritual electricity that exists called your purpose. It can go into a computer, it can go into a light bulb, it can go into a movie projector, it can go into a number of different things, but the fact of the matter is those are empty vessels until you bring the spirit of who you are into that vessel. So now you just have to say, are those the right expressions, are those the right vehicles for me to be expressing myself? And certainly if you're a mother, then that's a wonderful role for you to be expressing that, and you need to bring that energy that you have, that purpose, that God-given purpose into it. And then values are, and I use hands and feet to symbolize the missions because it's the day-to-day activity that we're about. And then values are symbolized by your throat and your gut. They are timeless. And the reason they're symbolized by your throat and your gut is that if you violate your values, you say things like, I have a gut feeling this is wrong. Something's not right about this. If somebody asks you to violate your values, some guy comes along and hits on you, you have a gag response, don't you, as a woman? You just like, what a jerk.
A really good example to women, yes.
Right, and so what's happening is you have this gag response because they're violating your values. And that's where your throat's trying to help you. So I try to tie purpose as the heart, vision is in the mind's eye, the mind, the head, missions are the hands and feet, and values are in the throat and gut. So I try to tie these things to visceral aspects of life. So when you're often just feeling down in your heart, it's probably you're off purpose. There's a purpose thing. There's a deep why issue going on. If it's called you've got a headache and things are going on, it's probably you don't have a clear vision of where you're headed and you're just confused. If you're you're just feeling dead tired or something, maybe you're actually about a mission, a day-to-day activity that's just a drag on you. And then if you're really having those violations of your values, your stomach's turning, you're gagging in the throat, you're constricted, then chances are you've got a values issue that's going on. And frankly, it's never that clear. It's always a combination of those things that are going on. But this is a way to sort of look at it and say, if my heart, my head, my hands are aligned within my values, then I'm on purpose. And the same thing's true for businesses, by the way. I look at businesses as persons. We do the same thing with businesses.
Right, and you've written a separate book of the on-purpose business. Is that correct?
The on-purpose business, yeah. The whole thing is a concept I call the on-purpose approach, and it's a life-work integration piece. I'm huge on integration, alignment and integration. I may be contradicting some things maybe you've taught in the past, but I do not believe that balance in life is what it's about. Balance in life is a mythology that gets more people pointed in the wrong direction. What they really want to be about is integrated around their purpose and through their purpose.
I think that actually is precisely what we have tried to do with Solutions Live. What we have said, and this show is aimed at professionals, is that you come to work as the whole person. And the more you can integrate who you are, the more authentic you will be. And, you know, I've said on the past on this show, which is about faith in the marketplace, is that the biggest thing that gets Christians in trouble is being one person on Sunday morning, if in fact they do go to church, and maybe they even volunteer, and then not to live that faith out authentically every day. And or worse, to come off to people as if, you know, I know somebody you don't know and I'm better than you because I know that person, rather than speaking of that faith and the person behind our faith as a friend that, hey, you know what, I would really like you to meet this friend. And it's funny because I always use, when I'm talking to people about my faith, I always talk about Chris, my co-host today, because I said, you know, if I were telling you about Chris, and maybe you had been at a party with somebody else who knew Chris, and I talked, you know, just passionately about how she is just, you know, my dearest friend, and, you know, you would want to know her. But, you know, if I talked about it exclusively as if I were name-dropping Chris's name, you'd have a very, very different impression. And so I think, again, you know, you and I talked yesterday, Kevin, about what happens with Christians who actually turn people off around them about their faith. And so people don't get the real gospel, which is, I love the guy who you know, screwed me out of a whole lot of money and put me into a very bad place. Or, you know, from my own life experience, you know, I've had a business failure over the last 2.5 years, or at least a temporary failure. I'm believing we're coming out of it on the other side. But, you know, it's easy to sit back and put all of that on somebody else rather than believing it's part of what God needed to do in me to get me to this amazing place. Where I can love the people who, you know, actually were a part of the play that ended up, you know, with a different end story than I would have liked.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, that's what I said. You're describing AFKEs are these things. You know, we have these learning experiences that we can transform and really move to a different place. I mean, there is no such thing as failure unless we claim failure.
Mm-hmm.
There are circumstances of failure where things don't work out the way we would like them to, but the fact is they're there now. And one of the neat things, you know, you were talking about sharing faith. I mean, I describe The On Purpose Person is really a book that's written in what I call living water language. And I think one of the things that's happened is for a lot of people of faith is they forget about Jesus meeting the Samaritan woman at the well, who he just talked to her about, I can give you living water. He didn't talk about anything. But when he was dealing with the Pharisees who were scribes and intellectuals and knew the law and all of those sorts of things, then he would talk in terms of the Torah. And we fail to understand that we need to meet people where they are. And just, you know, I don't know, we don't have to beat them over the head with Jesus, 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 Jesus. You know, it's just not what it's about. It's not the way he did it either. So, I mean, there's a lot of perversion of our faith, if you will,
right,
for lack of better words, all well-intended, mind you. I'm not knocking it. I mean, I understand it. But it's a lot of people that don't understand or may not sensitive to how to deal with people on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, it's like you were saying at a party, if you were talking about Chris, and you were dropping her name the whole time, people would get sort of sick and tired of hearing about Chris.
Oh, nobody would ever get sick and tired of hearing about my friend Chris.
No, I know what you mean. Talk about, you know, is that all she can talk about?
Exactly.
At some level, it's like the problem with that is it's kind of like I go back to How to Win Friends and Influence People, and in that book they were saying, did you ever get to know the person?
Right.
You never got to know the person because you were talking at them the whole time.
Trying to influence them. You have an agenda with them the entire time.
Right.
And how
as opposed
you
to really
get to know them.
Mm-hmm. So.
Kevin, that actually reminds me of something, and we only have a couple of minutes here before we have to shift gears again. But every time I hear about How to Win Friends and Influence People, I always want to write a children's version of that for my daughter who's in the fifth grade, because it is such an awful time to be a young girl, and you know, both the girls
getting
and the
worse
boys can be so mean. I'm wondering if you have done anything with children on your on-purpose work.
I have not written anything with children, but I will tell you one of the coolest things I ever did is I went into an elementary school, and I was trying to help kids understand how do you understand purpose, vision, mission, and values, and the, you know, and those sorts of things. So what I did is I broke the kids up into groups, and I said, okay, you guys are the heart over here, and I want you to tell me how you feel. You guys are the head over here. I want you to tell me what you think. You kids over here, you're the hands and feet. Tell me what you're going to do, and you guys are going to tell me how you're going to choose, because that's values are how we choose. And I created a scenario where this kid threw a rock, broke a window. He looked around. Nobody saw him. I said, "What are you gonna? How do you feel? What do you think? What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? And how are you gonna choose? You know?" And so I had them work through this thing, and then I had, you know, they of course all these kids are saying, "I got away with it, right?" That was kind of their thing. I got away with breaking the rock or breaking
right.
the window with the rock. And then I said, "Okay, now Mrs. Smith, your next door neighbor, saw you throw the rock, and the 2 days later she says to your mother, 'That's too bad about Billy when he threw the rock through the Smith's window.'" And your mother says, "What?" She said, "Oh, yeah, I saw him throw a rock, and he put it right through the window. Didn't he tell you?" "Okay, how do you feel?" "What are you thinking?" "What are you going to do? How are you going to choose?"
Wow.
"What did you learn?" And so in many ways, you can make these things very real for kids, and it's really a fun exercise I've done with elementary school kids, even nursery school kids. They get it.
Oh, Kevin, that
they
is
would
so powerful.
Yeah. They would so get it. I have goose flesh.
Well,
yeah.
you and I need to get together since you're just over in Orlando and I'm in Tampa. We're going to meet halfway for lunch one day and talk about how we can work together, because I love your approach and just would love to spend some time with you and let that on switch rub off on me.
We can come to a workshop sometime. That way,
I would love it.
Person, how about that?
And let's talk about your website a little bit more. And where to find you?
Yeah, if you could just close with that, Kevin, we need to move on.
Sure. Real fast, you can just go to onpurpose.com, and actually there's a free download of the On Purpose Person. The first four chapters, a free preview is there. Just go to the bookstore section and look for the e-books, but it's there for the taking, so please sample it.
Perfect.
And you also have a community. Why don't you just quickly give us that link,
and then we will make...
Mm-hmm.
We have another website called onpurposeplanet.com, and that's primarily for readers of the book, people that have read the book. Although you have to be approved to come in. I do the approving, and you have to fill out a little form, and then I look at it, and then we don't reject many people, obviously, but we just are trying to keep away the people who just want to drop in and just send, you know, garbage to everybody.
Got it.
So we approve it that way.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much, Kevin,
and
I am quite certain that we are going to be in further contact with you.
Great, and keep up the good work that you're doing. I mean, just God bless you with Blog Talk Radio and the Solutions Live. I think it's just needed. It's wonderful, so I encourage you, because guess what? You're being on purpose.
Well, thanks. We're certainly
good
trying to leave a legacy and help other folks do the same thing.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, Kevin, take care.
Bye.
Thanks much. All right, listen, we are going to take a quick commercial break and again thank the Vintage Racing League, who is our sponsor for this next half hour, and also to thank the Barbados Tourism Authority, who sponsored our new show, Real Life Renovations, with Phil and Amy Parham at 10 o'clock. That will be a regular feature moving forward, and we thank the Barbados Tourism Authority for making that work. Well, Chris, we have got somebody who is ready to come on the air. Let me just see if it's a question or if it's our next surprise guest.
Excellent.
Good morning, Area Code 617. It's Chickie Fitzgerald and Chris Bradshaw.
Hi, it's Veronica.
Veronica. Oh, I am so glad that you are able to join the show. I couched you as our surprise guest because I hadn't been able to connect with you by phone before the show.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. Hey, we are nothing if not flexible. Well, I want to tell folks just a little bit about how I came across your path, and I know that there are an awful lot of people who are on your path, so I am very, very late to the game. But a little bit of my story quickly is that I am just going through what I call near total reinvention. I've spent the last 30 years as a travel industry consultant specializing in all the underlying technologies that make everything happen, from making an airline reservation or accessing travel information on your iPhone, online sites, travel agency technology. And because of the awful state of our industry, decided to do something different and had a bunch of content, access to amazing guests and speakers, whether it's authors or experts, And I decided I really needed to dig in a little bit deeper to social networking. And I had already done LinkedIn and Plaxo, which are, you know, kind of the traditional place for business people to get started. You know, had done a little bit of Facebook, but had been very, very put off by getting, you know, electronic flowers and invitations to things that just weren't going to enrich either my personal life or my professional life. And in January, I decided to dig in to Twitter a little bit and to figure out what Twitter was all about. And lo and behold, I found Veronica. And yesterday, in preparation for the show, I wrote down the number of people who were following you on Twitter, and it was 178,000, which is just so impressive. I can't even begin to talk about that. But I'll tell you the most amazing thing is that this morning I looked again, and you've got 180,000. And there are a lot of people who would love just to have 2,000 people following them. And I'm going to let you tell a little bit about your background, but you host a show called Techzilla on Revision 3. Mm-hmm. And I looked at their stats, and last month they just had 162,000 unique visitors. So you actually have more followers than your show has unique visitors. So why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
A little bit about me. So I got my start in the technology industry at CNET, and from there I was doing podcasting and video hosting and a little bit of blogging here and there. And back in July of 2007, I left for Mahalo and started a show there called Mahalo Daily. And then in April of the years start getting a little fuzzy after that point, I started Techzilla and also Core, which is an interactive magazine on the PlayStation Network, last April. So now I'm doing both of those two shows along with blogging on my personal site and various other, you know, connecting with users and followers on various social networks.
Well, I had an immediate connection with you when I looked at your blog and read some of your stuff and also listened to some of your shows, because I as I mentioned to you in the confirmation email to you, I have been a Mac user since the mid 80s, and you know, had that very first one that looked like a little TV set, and you know, have had everything in between, and you know, was one of the early iPhone proponents. But the other thing is, you're a cat lover, and I have a gorgeous cat named Jojo, who last week on my show continued to come up to my headset and meow into my headset, which was a bit of fun.
I've definitely experienced things like that. Yeah,
so
my cats like to get involved with my work for sure.
So the technology side of things, I mean, obviously you're from a little different generation than Chris Bradshaw, my co-host, who, by the way, is on the phone also. She's in Dallas, Texas, and I'm in
Good
Tampa.
Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
So did you always want to get into the media side of things, or were you just a techie who you know, somebody spurred on and said, hey, you ought to talk about that?
Well, I always wanted to be in the media side of things. My early aspirations, like when I was in college and high school, were to be an audio producer and to do live sound recording or studio recording for bands and that kind of thing. So I was interested in that kind of entertainment side of things, but not necessarily in front of the camera or in front of the microphone or anything like that. When I really got my start at CNET, I was an audio producer there. And after a time, I started co-hosting Buzz Out Loud because I was, you know, behind the board and controlling the microphones, and every once in a while I had to kind of interject some kind of comment. So I would just turn on my own microphone and say it, and then they'd be like, oh, yeah, that's our producer, Veronica, by the way, in case you were wondering who that phantom voice was. And, yeah, from there, I started doing the video stuff. So it kind of got to that path a strange way. I wasn't ever really intending to do, I guess, the journalism type of stuff, or the talking on air, or being in front of the camera.
Oh, you're really a natural at it, though. I mean, I you just are so at ease with yourself. And a lot of people who are technically savvy aren't always good at articulating, you know, that passion that they have. And you just are a real natural.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And I commented to you when we first connected that, you know, as I was looking at your photos, it's like, Veronica, you should be a model. You know, because your photographer just did such an amazing job. I don't know whether those were professionally done or whether you've got a friend who loves the camera, but you love the camera too. So
it's
funny.
Actually, my friend Lon Bui and his brother Vu are photographers down in LA, and every time they come up to San Francisco or I get down there, we try to do something a little bit fun. And so they're just great guys, and I really appreciate the work they've done on my photos.
Well, my favorite one was you swinging from the swing, which I put in the promo video of you, which is on YouTube. So if anyone wants to see that, they can just go to YouTube and look up Veronica and Solutions Live, and you'll see that series of pictures I'm talking about. But it really showed a lot about your character and your nature, and just that you are willing to have fun with it. And I think that comes across in your Texilla show as well. Can you tell people how to look at the Texilla show?
Sure. Texilla is available at www.texilla.com. You can then choose various subscription methods, whether you're using, you know, Zune or iTunes or just Miro, anything like that. So it's a really easy way to kind of get caught up with what's going on in the technology world and see some fun how-tos. And the show, the main show, which is a 30-minute show, comes out once a week on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And the Daily Show comes out. It's just a one-minute, like, little quick tip thing that we do that we all shoot in one day and then put out the rest of the week.
Right. Yeah, I was watching some of those last night, and I signed up for the subscription on that because, again, since I am a Mac user and an iPhone user, I know you talk about that a lot. Veronica, I want to just circle back to talking about social media in general because, I mean, you are definitely an icon. I mean, I think anybody who can have a single name, you know, like Cher, you know, or Veronica on Twitter, where you don't even have to qualify it with your last name, either means that you were in way on the front end of that trend to where, you know, there wasn't a fight for what those screen names were going to be. You know, or you just lucked out. But, I mean, clearly it is not luck to have 180,000 people following you on Twitter. Can you tell us what's behind that?
Well, I have to say that it is a little bit of luck. I mean, in the very beginning of using Twitter, I did get in the early days, and I got my name, luckily. I always try to whenever a new social network pops up. It's just something I do. I think it's important to have your own name be kind of what you put out into the world. Unless, of course, you want to hide behind a handle of some kind. That's fine, too. But if you're trying to promote yourself and promote your work, it's always best to go with your real name. So I got in as Veronica, and at the time I was at CNET, so I had a lot of luck with getting followers from my various shows. And it was in the early days, so not a lot of people were on Twitter yet. It was mainly just the tech geeks, the early adopters, that kind of crowd. And it grew from there, and then what really happened with the large jump is a little bit of luck on my part, and that's because Twitter implemented a new feature called a suggested users list. And they added about, I'm not sure how many people total they added, probably about 20 or 30 people from all different walks of life, from all different industries. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough to be on that list. So at the time that I got on the list, I believe I was number 8 in the top 10 of users. Now I'm down to like 21, which is fine because it's great because I have a reach of a lot more people, but at the same time, you know, a lot of different people are also getting a significant amount of followers.
Well, you got beat out by Barack Obama because we interviewed the guy who wrote Barack Incorporated on our Tuesday show talking about mm-hmm. social media in the campaign. But, yeah, you've gotten beat out by some interesting people. But on certain sites, you actually are still listed in the top 10.
Oh, well, that's cool. You know, it's as I say, it ain't nothing but a number, right? But it's fun to be able to have a conversation with a large number of people and be able to use that as a tool to kind of poll people in real time for things they want to see on the show or to get information on a topic that I'm researching or just to share funny links that I found throughout the day.
Right, yeah, and you are absolutely great at that. I've really enjoyed following you and seeing what you recommend that we check out. And by the way, I am successfully using Things.
Oh, good.
the other day. I've been playing with that, and it is so incredibly integrated in with the rest of my desktop. I have been amazed that I haven't had to put more effort into doing it. So I will keep it posted.
It's a really great app. I mean, I was a Remember the Milk fan for a long time. I try to stick to the GDT thing, way of getting things done. Getting things done. I always mess up the acronym there. But Things is a great little simple program for managing your tasks. It is a little bit on the expensive side. I mean, it's a $50 app, and it comes with you can also get a $10 iPhone app that works with it as well. So it's an investment, but I found that I'm using it a lot more than I used Remember the Milk, which is I believe you pay $25 for the pro account for the year for that service. It's a web-based in the cloud type of service instead of a desktop app. But Things integrates a lot more easily with the rest of my life. So I've been using it a lot more, and it's definitely going to pay for itself pretty soon.
Right. How much time do you spend of your day or of your week actually looking at new technologies?
Looking at new technology, I think I probably get more of an opportunity to look at new websites and new stuff online as opposed to actual hardware. I would say probably about 2 hours a week looking at a new piece of hardware. Since I left CNET, I don't get as many hands-on with new gadgets as I would like to. That's just not something we do so much on Techzilla is product reviews. We've been doing it more lately, but mostly we've been a how-to and viewer question style show. But I try to get my hands on stuff as much as possible just because I want to be able to share that with my audience. And just because I'm a geek and I like to get my hands dirty with it and play with stuff like that.
Right, right. Yeah,
so
I don't think of myself as a geek, but I certainly am an early adopter, which is what those of us who are baby boomers call it.
I think a lot of people subscribe to that notion. I mean, there's benefits and disadvantages of being an early adopter, and one being, you know, you get in early, you get to talk about all the cool stuff you're experiencing with this new product or service, and it's just kind of fun and geeky at the same time. Downsides being you sometimes might deal with some bugs or issues that have come up from a first edition product or site. And also a lot of times, especially with Apple products, it seems they tend to drop the price or add new features relatively quickly after the first iteration.
Right. Right. Chris, I have been monopolizing Veronica. Do you have any questions?
Well, that's quite all right. And I've just been listening and I'm thinking of my life and the not early adopters and, we adopt things. We were, I got the iPhone the minute the price dropped, kind of, and things.
You're
like
smart.
That.
You're smart. You knew.
And then my husband got the 3G when it came out. But the things about things like Apple are the user interface and how intuitive things are. And y'all have been talking about a lot of Mac things, and except for the iPhone, my husband and I are PC. Our PC family, and the Twitter. I guess I'm still a little confused about Twitter, and would like you to talk a little bit more about that. Of why would I follow that, and how does that bring, you watch the kids who, what did I see the other day? Some child in high school had done 30,000 texts. In 1 month, something like that. And so I think of being a Twitter follower or being a Twitter user, and those kind of images come into my mind. So tell me how that's the wrong way for me to think about it, or maybe it is right.
Well, granted, we're a little more narcissistic these days. Like, we really like to talk about ourselves on the Internet, and we have all these different venues for doing so. But Twitter gives you an opportunity to not only kind of have some fun with it and share what you're doing with your friends, but also be a great networking tool and a way of finding out information as it's happening as opposed to waiting for news blogs to update. I mean, there have been tons of breaking stories on Twitter in the past 2 years that, major news organizations didn't pick up on until much, much later.
That's
so it's definitely
true.
A great way to spread and disseminate information at a very, very rapid rate and have it become viral quickly as well. But it's just fun. I just like being able to keep up on comings and goings of all my friends all across the world. You know, I'm not a big phone person. I check email as much as I possibly can, but with my shooting schedule, it can be hard sometimes. But with Twitter, I can just go online or go on my iPhone and get updates immediately about what's going on in the web world and what's happening with my friends. And that's really valuable. It's a very valuable tool for me.
And I know that there have been a lot of additional tools that have come out. What are your favorites that actually let you get the power out of Twitter or that allow you to use it in different ways? Or are you just a native Twitter user?
Yeah, I'm kind of a strange egg like that because I just use, you know, native Twitter, the web-based page primarily. That's what I use more than anything else. On my iPhone, I use Tweety, which is a great little simple app. I think it's like $3, but it's always done a great job for me of being able to retweet things and check up on search results. But otherwise, yeah, I don't use anything like TweetDeck or Twirl. I have these applications installed, but because of API rate limits, there's a rate limit of 100 pings at the Twitter API per, I don't know if it's per hour or per day or what the deal is. I can't remember off the top of my head. But it causes it to kind of stop working after a little bit of time if you're using an application like that. So I pretty much just stick to the web. It's just it's an easy way for me to not always be constantly pinged with information too, because a lot of those status updates, they'll ping up on your desktop and tell you when other people have tweeted or tell
exactly.
you when people have mentioned an instance of your name. I find that really interrupts what I'm working on.
You know,
so
that,
the web
that's a really good point.
Yeah, I can just go to it when I'm ready to you know, do some reading instead of having it be forced on me.
Gotcha. That helps.
Good. You should use it more. It's fun.
Exactly. I guess I was picturing showing up on my phone, showing up everywhere, like some of the Facebook applications or different other things where I'm getting, you know, I'm seeing friends of friends of friends who commented on a friend. And
you only have to make it as complicated as you want it to be. You know,
exactly.
It doesn't have to be an all-invasive, all-consuming type of social network.
I think the interesting thing, at least for me, Veronica, is because I had invested so much in building out my network first on Plaxo and on LinkedIn, because that's where I do most of my professional communication. I love that my Twitter, my tweets from Twitter actually show up on Plaxo in the feed that comes there. And Plaxo has done a really good job of deciding to be kind of the Switzerland and taking those open feeds and open APIs and making it really easy not to have to write things everywhere. And so I tend to use Twitter as my way to announce that I've done a blog post on the various blogs that I have. And I've got one for the show. I've got one for the faith side of me, and then one which is my you know, travel industry distribution blog, and mm-hmm. and so I don't have to go everywhere and say, hey everybody, you know, go take a look at this. So it's been really useful in actually streamlining my workload, which I love.
It's interesting to see how other websites and companies have either taken the idea of Twitter and implemented it, or actually used the Twitter API to bring more value to their users. Like Facebook is really making a big, big go to have the news feed and to have the status updates be very Twitter-like and try to keep people on Facebook as opposed to leaving that centralized area to go to other websites like
right.
Twitter. But at the same time, you know, Twitter has been implemented into a lot of sites as well.
Right, but, you know, I think that I find that short-sighted, though, because I think Plaxo really, really has the right idea because you know, it's just not as easy to manage kind of who your network is on Twitter because you can't really see what people do for a living in the same way. Again, if you're doing this professionally for professional connections versus just trying to build an audience for whatever message you have, and those are two very different purposes.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of balance that whole business side of things with the personal side. I try to do that, but since my business side of things, my promotion for my shows and whatnot, tends to be the kind of information that most of my followers want to read anyway, I can kind of have some personal fun with it and also promote the stuff I'm working on. But it's a lot harder when your work is a little bit disconnected from your personal life,
right.
I think. You kind of have to figure out a way to work those in together or just have separate feeds completely.
Right. So you're suggesting perhaps even having a separate username for your friends.
Yeah, sometimes I would consider, you know, if you don't feel comfortable pinging your friends with business-related information all the time, to have a Twitter feed that is based around your company with your company name, and then, you know, keep a separate personal feed for just, you know, fun updates and things you want your friends to see. That way you can grow your business audience without alienating your personal audience either.
That's a really, really good idea. You know, because again, I think that that's one of the reasons why I at first struggled with using Facebook at all, because it had been just my friends. And then now a lot of my business colleagues in the travel industry have started using it. And, you know, my friends, you know, from other aspects of my life, and now I'm trying to figure out how I commingle it all. So that's really, really, really good advice.
Yeah, Facebook has, they're really developing their fan pages, or also known as their public pages, where you can, it's mainly used for celebrity-type things or TV shows, but I think we're going to see a lot more corporations building fan pages on Facebook so they can collect users and update users on things that are happening in the company and share photos and videos and promotional stuff on there. And you can do that without having to add that to your existing social network. I mean, people
right.
who you're not already friends with can be a fan of your company without, you know, getting involved in your personal data.
Right, right. And I think that is really great that Facebook is starting to think that way. I think they still have a long way to go because they haven't acknowledged all of the different uses that people have for their product. And one example is I can't go in and put an event for my show. I mean, I can create an event, but I have to pick some bizarre category. They don't acknowledge that people are doing Blog Talk Radio or other things where they actually have a show or a conference call that is being scheduled as opposed to a physical party or a meeting. And so they just have some nomenclature issues of making it more friendly for how people are using it. And, you know, I know that they'll get there. I mean, they've got such tremendous momentum.
Yeah, Facebook definitely has to reconcile what their purpose is
right.
because they really started out as a closed network for college students to just, you know, share fun things right on each other's walls and send each other messages within the service. And now that it's become such a behemoth and is really moving to take on MySpace, they have to figure out how to open things up a little bit more. Cat's eating my plant again. Sorry. Damn cat. They have to figure out how to... Sorry for the distraction. They have to figure out how to make themselves a little bit more open and available to not only companies that want to promote their products and build a user base and a fan base, but celebrities and people who need to have more than that, you know, 5,000 friend limit to be able to do their jobs.
Right, right. Well, Veronica, it has been such a pleasure, and I am really looking forward to following you on Techzilla in addition to following you on Twitter. And I will make sure for those who don't know how to get a hold of you to put that on the Solutions Live Blog Talk Radio site and also on the blog for Solutions Live. And I just want to just really commend you for what you have already accomplished. I think you're leaving behind a pretty important legacy, and that really is the theme of our show. So just go and have a great day, and I will look for you on Twitter and just look forward to getting to know you better.
Thank you so much, ladies. Have a great day.
Thank
okay.
you.
Terrific.
Bye-bye.
Chris,
bye.
We need to close down, and I look forward to chatting with you on Tuesday morning about the amazing week that we've had. So
absolutely.
I will talk to you again on Tuesday morning at 10, and go and have a great day.
For more information about Solutions Live, please see www.solutionslive.blogspot.com. That's Solutions with a Z. I trust that today's show provided some information and some inspiration. Go out and begin to leave your legacy today.